Hi, everybody. Welcome to Paul Listick, Behind the Curtain. It's my opportunity to step away from the world of law and politics you watch me cover every day on television into the world of theater, the arts, and today, comedy. So I came across this guy on Instagram, TikTok, and all these other places. I do go to Instagram. I'm not a TikTok guy, but he's everywhere. And I think he is absolutely hysterical. And then I see, wow, he's coming to Chicago. Coming to Zanies. Of course it's Zanies, because where else would you go if you're doing comedy? And I wanted you to meet him and get a chance to go to his show, which is going to happen on October 6th. So joining me is Jamie Wolf. Jamie, so nice to meet you sort of in person.
Paul, it's so nice to meet you. Definitively not in person, but yes. Definitively on Zoom, but it's still very nice to meet you. You were very kind, and I'm excited. I've watched your interviews with the SNL cast members and how the mighty have fallen, Paul. Now you're just talking to me.
And I think, I wasn't thinking that way. I'm thinking, are they even on SNL anymore after talking to me? But I think they might be. So
they all got uncast.
Like they all, these people. Yeah. Lauren Michaels saw that interview and go, we're done. Anyway, I think you're hysterical. We're going to talk about your brand and style of comedy. But first, let's introduce you to people who maybe have not found you yet in the world of social media and stuff. Because you play it very much like a New Yorker guy, but you're actually a Philly boy.
I'm a Philly boy, yeah. I don't know what you mean by play it like a New Yorker, because
you cover. You get right into the rough and tumble of topics.
That's very true. I think it's that like Northeast mentality. Where are you from, Paul?
I grew up in Chicago. I grew up in the burbs, but I'm a Chicagoan my whole life. So I'm your Midwestern charming boy.
Yes, no, totally. And it's, I have my best, one of my best friends is from the Midwest. It's totally a sensibility thing. Like Northeast, I think it's mainly Philly, New York, Boston. That area just goes right to it. There's no what I would describe as kindness or warmth. There's no sense of propriety or politeness. They just go right to it. And it's great. It's great living in a place where everyone's proud of being mean.
You know, I actually have a theory. Really nice. I have a theory of where it comes from, which you might be relate to as a Philly guy, which is if you are born and raised there or you visit Philly, you want to see Ben Franklin's house. And when you go look for Ben Franklin's house, you find out it's not there. There's a line on the ground that goes, yeah, there was a house here. And you get just angry and depressed.
Exactly. And then you go on stage and you yell and you rant.
Exactly. It's beautiful. So you are totally all over the New York comedy scene. That's why I guess I think of you then in that New York way. And I know you're at the Comedy Cellar and New York Comedy Club and all sorts of places. We'll talk about your podcast too, by the way. I've watched some episodes of that to get into that. We'll talk about it, but let's talk about your comedy. You're coming to Chicago. And I think when I think of your style of comedy, and I sort of just said it, but you go into the worlds that, well, these days everything is different, but some would call the topics a bit taboo. Some would say it's a little, in other words, you're not afraid to talk about anything.
Yeah, that is true. That's very true. And I don't think I do that on purpose. I just think that's the way my brain works. I mean, it's just like a sensibility thing. I like to talk about stuff that's interesting, and stuff that's interesting to me is stuff that maybe you shouldn't talk about, or maybe not that you shouldn't talk about, but just things that are scary to talk about or will make you uncomfortable or the audience uncomfortable. Those are the places that excite me. That's where like, I'm like, why would I make a joke about, you know, going to Starbucks when we can really get into it? And I talk about stuff that's, I usually, if I'm starting to write a joke, I start thinking about things that, bad things that have happened to me, like experiences that I didn't like, usually because that's funny to other people. Going to therapy. Yeah. Yeah. Like anxiety or therapy or, you know, a lot of like taboo stuff that like isn't spoken about too much in like just like in the broader public in society. And I like to discuss those things because it's the interesting stuff. It's the stuff that's not discussed. You know, like it's what you wouldn't say to a friend. A lot of comics are like, here's how am I with my friends? I want to be that way on stage. I'm like, what would I not say to my friends? Let's say that on stage. That's what's interesting to me.
And what I love about it, and here's the thing, I mean, I know a lot of your material because when you come to Chicago on October 6th, I'm going to be there that night. And so it's actually the first time I'm going to see you in person, but I feel like I know so much of your material because you're actually kind enough to share lots of clips of it. And that's how you introduce yourself to so many people. So when I mentioned the therapy thing, who isn't in therapy at some point in the life, and yet it's almost Seinfeldian, the take that you take on certain sort of things, because you'll say, you know, being in therapy is one thing, but it's really the way you talk to yourself. And then you go on, and I mean this is a compliment, but in, to me, a Seinfeld kind of way to sort of give these some examples and things, which if you're watching it, you're going, exactly, that's exactly what happens, which is what makes it funny. Now, I'm not going to try and give your material away. I mean, if you want to say something, that's up to you, because I want people to come see what you have to say here. But just look, we live in a world of tough politics, right? So you had one, I will sort of say this, when you said, when there's somebody who describes themselves as a white supremacist sympathizer, and you make the point, if you're a white supremacist sympathizer, aren't you just a white supremacist? I mean,
yeah, there's no difference. There's no distinction to be made, because there's no one out there who's like, I mean, I'm not a white supremacist, but I'm sympathetic. Like, I get it.
So how does some of this stuff strike you? Are you reading the headlines and watching the, you know, well, I'm the only one still reading headlines in a newspaper, but I mean, is it just here's what's going on in the world?
Do you use a physical newspaper?
I actually do. And so you know what? And when I go into the TV studio, and I'll sometimes tell my producer, oh, I just came across an article, whatever. She said, Paul, that was yesterday's news. You know, and I'm like, yeah. I get it, but I love the newspaper. But anyway, so what's your, it's pitiful, Jamie. What is your style? Are you just online and doing things all the time, and then something strikes you? Or are you looking for material when you're looking at headlines?
Yeah, you know what's funny is you're like, are you reading the newspaper? Are you paying attention? I literally pay, and I mean this, I pay the least amount of attention of anyone I know. I do not read headlines. I avoid the news on purpose. I try not to intake information on the internet. I have a time limit on my phone that limits the amount of time I can spend on social media. So really? All I do on social media is I post on social media, and then I don't follow up. That's all I do. And I think that is, but then just things just, you know, things like creep in. I hear the phrase white supremacist sympathizer, and I just like sort of think about, I'm like, that's a weird phrase. Why is that weird? I just think about like the, like language a lot. I think about like experiences that have happened to me, and I try to like channel the medium of stand up and structure these things in a way that becomes funny. But I don't believe, a lot of comics are like, what makes you laugh? What's funny? Say that on stage. I don't believe that. I think my job is to take difficult and make them funny via the medium of stand-up comedy. And I think if you come out to see my show, if you're not looking for that, you'll just have a good time. If you're looking for that, you're going to go, oh, he touched a bunch of things that I would never have thought would be funny in a million years. And he made them funny. And that's my goal. That's my whole goal is like, something that it shouldn't even feel that I'm touching a taboo topic. That's how okay I want to make that topic. The whole idea is like relieving the tension and making things that make you feel afraid or uncomfortable in real life, and taking that discomfort and just making it fun. Just making white supremacist is like a horrible thing. It's like a terrible thing. Like, is there a way to make it like funny? Like, can we make a white supremacist sympathizer like a funny thing and rob it of like the scary power? That's just what I think stand up is. That's what it should be, I think.
To me, what's making it extra funny, taking it maybe to a different level, is it's not really the white supremacist per se you're making fun of. It's that sympathizer who goes, I'm not one of them. You know, I just feel for them. And you're like, well then wake up, dude. I mean, that to me is that it's that little extra step you take. Just away from that original. So I guess I'm sure you're asked a lot who your influences are. Now, I already said I find some of your material Seinfeldian, which I think is a great compliment. Am I off base when I say that? Do you like no, or do you say yeah, that's one of them?
So I want to say a caveat before I say this, but thank you for saying that. I know he's one of the best comedians ever, and like technically one of the best writers and performers of comedy that have ever existed. I never laughed at a Seinfeld bit once in my life. Like, I've never found him funny because And I know he's like great at stand up, and I appreciate that. And I listen to him and I watch him, but it's just, he doesn't, it's like, he's the opposite of the kind of comic I want to be. Like, he talks about like silly, like everyday things, like the hair on the shower wall and right. like toothpaste bottles. And that's great. And I totally like, I love that. And he's an amazing comic, but it just doesn't, that's not what makes me laugh. What makes me laugh is like taboo things. Richard Pryor, Maria Bamford, Louis C.K., you know, before everything.
Yeah. What about like Lenny, the history of a Lenny Bruce?
Lenny Bruce, George Carlin, these people, these transgressive people. And it's that's what interests me. And that's what excites me. Like, you know, everyone does it in different ways. But like, and I love like Nate Bargatze's comedy because he's the opposite of that. Like, he and Seinfeld are just a way to have fun, and just everything seems silly, and it seems, life seems hilarious with them. But I always prefer something a little with an edge, something that's like upsetting, probably because I'm from Philadelphia, and Philadelphia is an upsetting place.
Because you don't have Ben Franklin's home.
Because there's, where is it?
You can't draw a line there and tell me it was here. Unless the story, unless the story is that he was flying a kite and the electricity burned the house down. I can accept that.
Or he's flying a kite and it lifted him off the ground with his house, like an
Yes,
and then, like, and then he went to South America with a dog,
like Wizard of Oz. Do you know when I think you are at your best? And I don't think you will disagree with me, because these are clips that I see. So you're posting them, so you have to agree with me. And it's not unlike what's. Go ahead.
I disagree. This is true.
Disagree. I didn't tell you what it is yet.
No, my strategy is post the worst clips of me, because then when you come out to a live show, it's 10 times better. But go ahead.
All right. Well, actually, the when you were best, I was not about to say because it was bad material or anything like that, because you don't have really bad material. But the feat, to me, your funniest moments, you need your audience. And it's the people who you actually will sometimes use the word heckle with them. They're not really heckling you, because they're not, to me, heckle is a bad thing. They're trying to annoy you and stuff. Your audiences don't do that. They're almost, they're just saying things because they like you, whatever. So it's not a heckle in that way. Or the woman, of course, the honking laugh woman, where you couldn't even control yourself. That is sometimes the funniest stuff. And what I loved about that, and I'm pretty sure that was the clip where she's honking, you're laughing. But one of the things you say, I think, in that clip is to say, this wasn't even going very well. And you catch the fact that the audience applauds after that line, and you laugh even more because you're going, you people applauded when I just said my material isn't going that well. That stuff,
exactly.
You can't prepare that stuff, Jamie.
That was such a funny moment. It was also not a woman. I see why you think that.
Oh, it was a like guy? I thought it was a guy. Okay.
It was like a 6'7", 250-pound dude.
Okay.
Was
well, we never saw him, man. So.
No, I know. It was just, I think it makes it funnier that he was just a massive, he was like an Aaron Judge of a guy. He was like 6'8", 250, just like, like laughing like a clown. It was so fun. That was one clip where I just legitimately, I could not stop. I actually, on stage, I cut out like 2 minutes. I couldn't stop laughing. And it kind of ruined my whole set because I literally couldn't keep talking. I cut out like a minute and a half of me just crying laughing because it got me so good. It's also such a funny situation when you're bombing and then that turns it around. It's like, you work so hard on jokes and there's nothing funnier than some guy going.
Yeah. And I'm not giving credit to the guy. It's just, but it's how you handle it. It's what you do. I'm sorry. You cut out that minute of you laughing. Because am I right? It's sort of like going to maybe a Broadway show and somebody drops a line or they crack up. Audiences love those moments.
Yeah.
So my guess is your audience loved the fact that you actually couldn't get control of yourself because you were laughing so hard.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. I think people love that when a comic is genuinely laughing. That's fun for them. But I do try to like, yeah, it has to be genuine. You know, you can't like force things like that. They just kind of happen,
right?
And you can't control or plan for it. But that is part of like what I like to be like present in the room with the people that I'm there with, and I like to bring people in and like work with the audience and have an experience that's unique. That's very fun. That's almost why I don't like the internet, is because like part of what I love about stand-up is it's ephemeral. You have to be there live. Like you can't replicate how funny that was on the internet. I mean, you can do a decent job, but like there's nothing like that moment when you really are there in the room. It's not going well, and this guy's laugh just sets the whole room like just can't stop laughing all of a sudden. It's like a magic to it that like you can put online, but you need to be there live to experience like the feeling of that.
But you also have to have your skill. There's another bit where you hear a line, but it turns out it's somebody in another room that says the line, and you come to realize it's actually somebody elsewhere. And then you go off on that about, you know, what if they say this or say that, whatever, when they're actually in some other space. Again, that's just spontaneous. I mean, to me, look, I could write maybe some comedy and get up and maybe deliver it. That is so different from what you are required, what I should say, what you're required to do, but what you are able to do so well, which is when you walk on, you've got your material, but you're prepared to just go with the flow and go in the minute you're in.
Yeah, exactly. It's so interesting too, because I think people that aren't comedians like the spontaneity and like the being funny in the moment. And then if you talk to comedians, no one has respect for that. Like no one, if someone's good at interacting with the crowd, you call it crowd work. No one has like respect for people that are good at that. What people respect is like people that write jokes, prepare material. And it does, I don't totally know why. I think my theory is it's just 10 times harder to sit down and write jokes. Like when you're in the moment responding, you can get away with a lot of lines that would never be funny if you'd prepared them. It's kind of interesting because the audience is there. It's like alive. They're all excited. They know you just thought of that. And part of the excitement and the comedy comes from just knowing it was off the top of your head in that moment. And I do like that. I like that. And those are awesome moments for me and for like to share in the room. But it's interesting because comedians themselves don't have no respect for it. It's very interesting.
How much do you play off you play a lot off the audience, but in terms of those instantaneous lines that you come up with, is it a moment of saying, I'm doing this one because of the people I'm with right now. And tomorrow night, if this happens again, it might not work with that group. I mean, are you reacting to those people at that minute?
I will never, I guess there's like one time I've repeated something I've done, but my whole goal, if I'm talking to the audience or if it's in the moment, is to never repeat something I've said before. That's like my whole goal. Or never repeat something I've said and try not to repeat something I've heard someone say, is to be like so in the moment that I come up with a new thing each time. And that's like, that's my goal, is to be that comfortable and that like present. And it's hard. It's harder with some audiences than others, because that's the interesting thing with stand-up, is like the audience's energy actually affects your performance. So like if the crowd is like really excitable and fun, you can your mind, it's like open. It's like you're on like LA, it's like you're on some kind of drug or something. Like you just see all the possibilities and you play around in all of it. And then when they're a tough crowd and they don't laugh at much, it's like hiking through mud. Like you make so little progress.
You're trying to find a way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, but it's all fun. It's all. Yeah.
Before we chatted, I talked with Garrett Clayton, if you know him, sort of at Disney movies and stuff. He's coming to Chicago to perform. Yeah. And he had done a play with Al Pacino. And just what you said reminded me of that, because he said the fascinating thing about Pacino is he says he will never, even in a play, which you're doing night after night, he's committed to never delivering the same line in the same way twice.
Wow.
Yeah, tough to do, but you made me think of that when you said that, and just imagine this, the variety of just even though your material if you're playing several nights in a place, I'm sure your material is a lot the same, but knowing that I'm going to play it differently each night depending on who's there, kind of a good message. You do touch politics. I of course love that world, but which is also a dangerous world, because I'm, just so you know, I'm neutral on the air. I'm an analyst. I'm not a commentator. So if I, whatever I'm saying, I'm always balancing it off. That doesn't stop the hate mail from coming. And so, you have some material that you've posted. People can check it out, where it was the Trump-Biden debate had clearly just happened. But you didn't get in there by attacking Biden or Trump. You just made the comparison to your grandfather. And that's what I thought was great, because you're dealing with one of the hottest topics one can deal with. I mean, hot, dangerous topics to deal with, which is politics. And you disarm it by just going, it's really my grandpa.
Yeah, exactly. I compared the Biden Trump debate to just my grandparents arguing. Trump's like my grandma and Biden's like my grandpa. And that's what I like, because I think politics and any topic where people inherently agree, half of the people inherently agree with you or half of them disagree with you, it's just easy. It just is. If I say something disparaging Trump, the Biden people laugh. If I say something disparaging Biden, the Trump people laugh. It makes it very simple to do jokes about it. and it makes it hard to do anything original. And also, this is almost all comedy is like, just I try to make it personal. Like, how does this affect me? Because at the end of the day, there has to be a reason these people came to see me do stand up and not someone else. So it all has to be, unfortunately, it's a little narcissistic, but the focus of the show, at least the lens of the show, is through my eyes. So I have to, the best thing I can do is don't be a political operative, be just a human being watching something. What is this like in my personal experience? Rather than like, well, Biden was like an idiot and Trump was the man, you know. That's not comedy. I mean, but people do that, but it's not comedy.
Well, there's those who will say, okay, performer, stay in your lane, right? And, you know, because then you can lose an audience instantly when you start getting into the real politics of what's going on.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You've played Chicago before, so you're coming back. And I'm sort of curious, because I talked about you, again, these are my reactions to you, just the New York or the tough whatever. How does Chicago impact yours, if at all? Impact your style? Like, when you come here, do you say, I'm in the Midwest, I'm going to do something a little different? Chicagoans, I don't have to tell you, are incredibly sophisticated. And so it's odd. I just interviewed Jordan Klepper last week, and you know, he talks about the fact that these are smart people in this city. You're not going to pull anything over on them.
No, exactly. I mean, Chicago is, and I mean this, is like top three city to perform in the U.S. I mean, they're smart people. They're not like overly sensitive. They're not overly political. They're just like good American folk, and they want to laugh, and they're well educated, and they're smart, and it's truly one of my favorite. And I'm not saying this to pander. It's like actually one of the best places to perform. The one thing I'll say, in the Midwest in general, I have like some jokes about religion as a topic, and I always wait till later in the set to pop those out in Chicago, to get a feel for the audience, so because they can be more religious than, say, a New York or a Philadelphia.
Oh yeah, you'd have a lot of Catholics here and whatever. Right. So does that mean you're a little more cautious? You're waiting to see if the pulse, if you can get away with it.
Yes, you're waiting to see if you can get away with it, to get a feel, and then also you're waiting to get them so on your side that when you bring up religion, they kind of trust you and they're willing to hear you out, as opposed to if you do it in the first 5 minutes. Then they're like, whoa, you're a guy we don't know talking about a topic that's very personal to us. So how about you stay away from that? So you kind of just wait a while to get them on your side, have them trust you, be like, these jokes aren't coming from a bad place. I don't disparage anyone's beliefs. I'm just here to let's just have fun. Let's do like a silly joke about, you know, just a silly joke about religion and try to. But some people will never get there. But sometimes if you wait, you can get people that wouldn't initially come with you to come with you. And then it can be a fun experience. That's kind of like what I want to do in comedy, is like get people to see things from a different perspective, a perspective they don't consider always. And hopefully it's a funnier one than one they're used to. And so it makes life just seem silly and hilarious, even when it's like very, very, it could be construed as offensive or like touchy.
So do you, and of course, because when I watch all your clips, you touch on topics. There's one I'm not going to talk about. It involves a crime that you make very funny. Right? Words that go with things and whatever. And at first you can, you know, it's almost a dangerous thing to say. And then within a line or two, you know, you just realize how what you're pointing to is so absurd that why we go there. But my question is, what I don't know is as I watched so many of your clips, I don't know the order in which you've said things. So when you open a show and you're, hi, I'm Jamie, what do you always start off with? Okay, we're going to start off with like Mary Poppins level stuff, you know?
I always start off with a song and dance.
Ball. Yes, a little spoonful of sugar, you know?
With a top hat and a cane, just twirling it. Welcome to my show. No, exactly. I do like to open. Yeah, I mean, I think it's important. For me at this point, as an unknown entity, mostly in the places I perform in, to be starting off with material that's very observational, very surface level, to get people on my side to trust that I can be funny. And other comics, like you'll see, like, you know, George Carlin started a special by talking about abortion. I would never do this. Or like Pryor started a special talking about police brutality. I would never do that, because they need to know who you are. They need to trust you before they're willing to go with you there. So like maybe down the road, if I'm known, I'll start with like something more heavy. But for me, establishing myself up top the first 20 minutes, I have to be just silly, funny, maybe self-deprecating, but observational. And just they have to trust like, oh, he's funny. He's a funny guy. And then maybe you can go to other like deeper places. Yeah. But it's just establishing yourself. Yeah, I certainly start off with a song and dance. I start off with a number. I start off just silly. I hand candy out.
By the way, you know, when you say candy, you know, you're right next to you. Well, last time you were here, did you go into the fudge pot?
Oh, so good.
My picture's up on the wall, so let them know that we're friends. But yes, and then when you're there, I'll kind of take you and point out which things you must be eating.
The fudge pot. Yes, yeah.
And you know what they have? If you like chocolate-covered frozen bananas, they don't advertise them, but they have them because you kind of have to eat it quickly. So if you like bananas, ask for one of the – and just tell them, Paul told you about the frozen chocolate banana. They know me, so yes, go get it.
I'll tell my girlfriend, too. Paul said I can go into the fudge pot.
And use his name, his picture's on the wall, and they said, you'll give me – told him to put it on my tab or something. We'll do that. So you told me about your influences, which I'm glad you did. So here's a different spin on that part of the question as, again, I'm trying to get people ready for you to come to Chicago on October 6th, which is if you were the – and you describe yourself as not as well-known here, whatever. See, I feel like you're real well-known because I've seen so much of you. But if one of today's number one headlining comedians was to invite you to be their opening act, who do you want to be the opening act for?
Oh, that's such a good question, Paul. I guess there's like just a couple ways to think about that. One would be like the experience that you get, like performing in new places. For that, it would be like someone really big, like Andrew Schultz, who does like arenas. But in terms of like my comedic influences, I'd love to open for like Sam Morril. It's like one of my favorite comics right now. He's just a really good joke writer, and he does a similar style to me, I think. Sam Morril, Maria Bamford is way up there. Jordan Jensen, amazing, amazing comedian, friend of mine, but amazing comedian. Jeff Asmus, like these are people that like I really look up to, and they're sort of, some of them are like lesser known than others, but they're all just unbelievable comedians. Jordan Jensen.
Yeah, but you're not giving me names like, you know, and I'm thinking people who do tour, you know, Colin Jost and Trevor Noah and different people like that. You're not looking at that. Is that because they're not your thing, or is it because you're not ready for those guys?
Not my thing. Yeah. It's not that they're not my thing. I just, I don't know. I don't know why I didn't think of them. I guess it, you know what it is? It's like recency bias. Like I've watched all the people I just listed do stand up in the last week. And I think that's why I named them.
Gotcha. Well, that
just
makes
like
sense.
The people I see. Yeah.
Right. And I just want to reference just a couple of other things. I want people to be kind of familiar with what you're doing and whatever. And you have a little bit about kid secrets versus adult secrets.
Oh,
and of
yeah.
Course, you take it to the crossover where kids are where adults are telling kids secrets and whatever. I mean, again, but do you see why I see the Seinfeld in that? I mean, it's kind of your version of taking what should be. We don't ever think about it.
Yeah.
But when you do, when you put it into the forefront of our mind, we're like, well, yeah, but I haven't thought about that.
Yeah, that's the beauty of comedy. That's what I want. That's like the feeling that what you just described is the feeling that I want. It's that feeling of like, wow, he sort of just said something that I've always thought and never expressed. Like that's what comedy is. And you're right. Seinfeld is like the best at that. He's like the number one. And I wouldn't disparage Seinfeld. It's just like, it just doesn't make me laugh personally because I was addicted to Oxycontin and I it's got to be really messed up for me to laugh now.
Now, by the way, you just said that, and but people are listening to you think, wait a minute, is he mocking something? But there's truth to what you just said.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, I used to do a lot of Oxycontin.
Yeah.
When I was younger. Is that what you're referring to?
Part of your bio. So it's coming off of that as well. And that comes up in the show. You don't hide from that.
Oh yeah, that comes up in the show. That's a big part of the show, but it comes up later on. But this is my point: is like Seinfeld has no material that even approaches that sort of thing, and that's what makes me laugh because I've gone through some really terrible experiences in my life, and like seeing darkness, you know, overdosed before, like things like this. I don't think like a pun or a silly observational bit makes me laugh. Personally, there has to be something that's sort of taboo or messed up about it a little bit, sort really of like a wire was crossed in my head. Yeah.
And we get some of this stuff. Let's talk about the podcast for a little bit, which you do with your friend Lucas Zelnick. I tried to find a way to describe it myself because I'm coming up with it. Some folks on a couch talking. But how do you describe the podcast for folks you want to check it out?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that is what the podcast was for a long time, what you just described, people on a couch talking. We recently switched up the format. Like the last couple episodes, we're now doing more interview style. So we're now bringing on people that we're interested in just getting to know, and we're sort of just learning about their lives as opposed to what we did before, which was literally what you said. It was the exact description of the podcast. It was people on a couch hanging out, which is not a good podcast. It was not interesting. I think it's gotten better. It's now like we have interesting conversations with funny or interesting people. And if the people are interesting, then we're funny. And if they're funny, we make them interesting. That's sort of the.
And do you have any models there? I'm drawing a blank on the name, but Sean Hayes, those guys, you know, who do the podcast. Is there a model in the podcasting world that we want to do that kind of thing?
Oh, is that Smart? Is that Smartlet?
Smartless. Yeah, yes, Smartlet. That's it. Right.
Yeah. We sort of like, I guess like Theo Vaughn's podcast is an interesting comparison. Like he has on comedians and other people, and he's a good interviewer. Like he asks interesting questions, and also he himself is funny. He's a really funny on the podcast. So I think Theo Vaughn's podcast, if you like that, it's sort of like a breezier, shorter version. Like we do hour 15. Theo does like 3 hours, but we try to do like a short, condensed, interesting, funny conversation with a person that you're interested in learning about and we're interested in learning.
And the name of the podcast, because I feel like it changed as I was trying. I mean, I was seeing it in different ways in different times. I told you I watched. What is the current name of the podcast?
Yeah, you're a devout fan, Paul. No one. We can't even get people to watch the podcast who by advertising, and you're watching every episode to prepare for the interview. Maybe we need to do more interviews to get people to watch the podcast. But we named it. It was Sobriety, and then we renamed it. Can I Go Home Now? ? The goal of the podcast.
That's what I actually thought. Is that the current name? That's what I thought it was.
Yeah. Exactly. That's okay. The good. Well, you nailed it, Paul. As our biggest fan, our number one podcast listener, you nailed it.
Exactly. Well, here's the good news. I mean, the way that I find so much of your stuff now is that people can go to your website, and I'll put this on the page when we launch this, which is Jamie Wolf Comedy. And that's how people can find out a lot about what you're doing, the podcast and all of that. I feel, Jamie, it's like I don't know when this happens, but it's almost like you're ready to explode. There's going to be a moment I'm going to say, hey, he did my podcast one day. and you will deny it.
Paul, you say that to all the girls.
Well, I said it to the SNL guys, but
well, they're already on SNL.
Yeah, I know. No, do you feel that too? Do you feel like you just need that breakout moment and it's not far away? I feel that way for you.
That's really sweet. No, I don't think about it in those terms. I just try to approach each show and try to keep getting better. But I don't think of like exploding or like blowing up in that way. I think of it as like, try to get better and then try to keep making a living doing it. And that's my job. And my job is to be funny consistently and keep trying to get better and push myself. But I don't think of it as like exploding. I mean, I'd certainly like more money. That would be really nice to have.
It's always good.
More money and not do.
It's just a blurred background. Lots of people do blurred backgrounds.
Not do podcasts in my bathroom.
Ah, that's now we're actually towels. Getting the background. Okay. You see, this is how comfortable you are with me and viewers and stuff. You went the heck with it. Here it is, the towels.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And I hope that's the way you're going to feel when you get. And I want you to feel that way when you get to Chicago too. Well, Zany's is such a great. I mean, I think there's people that go to Zany's. They don't even know who's playing some nights. They just did Zany's.
Zany's is the best. It's been around what 40, 50 years, and
yeah, and the guy that owns him, runs him now is you know, Rick is phenomenal. We'll probably see on our morning show. It would not surprise me if you end up on the morning show. I do that show, but I'm not one of the main anchors on that show. But because I don't think you've done the morning show with us before, right?
I don't think so. No.
Tell Rick you want to do the morning show. It's the number one show in Chicago by far.
Oh, I'll tell him.
It's an experience you want, and there's comedians as part of it, and they did a bit with me this morning about how many bow ties I wear. I mean, it's just they can do serious news, but also some of the funniest stuff. Well, today is National Bow Tie Day. I didn't know that, and so Mike Toomey, who's professional comedian, but he's also the anchor for that. He's the host of that last part. He asked the anchors how many bow ties they think I own, and that became the contest, and then we ran a video. Anyway.
Wait, what's the answer?
The answer was over 100. That is kind of my
agreement.
Yeah, you don't get it on the podcast, but when I'm covering television stuff, it's a lot of podcasts. So, you know, the one anchor guessed it at 32. Another anchor said over 50. Pat, the sports anchor, Pat Tomasulo, who is a professional comedian himself, hysterically so, he guessed it at 100 and he got it. But anyway, this is about you. And before I lose you, I want to remind people of where they can see you. Zanies on North Avenue. Thank goodness. I like going to the North Avenue one. And you're a block from Second City. So I hope you get to see that too. October 6th, 7 p.m. Just the one show, I believe, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. And tickets at zanies.com and jamiewolfcomedy.com is where they can check out all the stuff we've been talking about and follow you on Instagram and TikTok as well. I assume, right? I don't go to TikTok, but you're there.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I'm on TikTok.
You're great. I can't wait to see you here in the city, Jamie. I'm so excited you're coming back, and I'll be there and rooting you on. And I'll be back with you.
I can't wait. All right. I can't wait to see you, Paul. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to go to the fudge spot with you.
You got it. Fudge spot, and I'm working on my honk now. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.